Today is March the 30th, 2012. This is Sylvania City Council. The time is 7:35 a.m. This is not a council meeting. This is a committee of the whole meeting of Sylvania City Council. We are having these meetings every month this year to continue to discuss budgetary issues. In attendance is Todd Milner, Mike Brown, Katie Capellini, Sandy Hussman, Mark Lukey, Mary Westfall from the administration, the mayor, Jim Moan, George Eichenauer, Chief Rodas, and Bill Sanford, and Scott Smith. I want to thank Scott Smith for his work preparing for this meeting. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Scott.
All right. In front of you, you have several schedules that I put together. You might have seen them in your email yesterday. I guess the purpose of what I wanted to show today was just some sort of a projection of where our fund balance will be heading in the next few years. First schedule.
What page are you starting with?
I'll just start right at the top at number one.
Okay.
First page shows a trend and two years projections of the major revenue categories for the city. It looks at the income tax, real estate taxes, the local government's funds, the inheritance tax, and the investment income. And I took this out to 2013 because I really wanted to point out how we're going to be affected in 2013. When we're projecting that the rest of our local government will be eliminated and our inheritance tax will be eliminated. So you can see in 2013 when that happens, we're about $2 million less than back in our peak year, which was back in 2007. So if you look at the next page,
you need to explain why, Scott.
Well,
just go line by line.
All right, the income tax. We did have a dip in 2009, but we recovered from that. And you know, we've had about a three-year growth last year, and we're just projecting a small growth into 2013. The real estate taxes really are back to about where they were in 2006. You know, we put the mill and a half back on for 2012, and that brought us back up to where we were. The local government has been phased out, beginning with the governor's budget last year. And we're projecting that next year's budget, he's going to eliminate the second half of it. So that's why that goes down to zero. The inheritance tax, that's just been removed completely. And investment income, you know, back in 2007, where interest rates were really high, we're thinking that was $1.5 million line item, and now, you know, last year we received $182,000. I don't see that coming up at all. So the net effect of those major categories is down about $2 million. So then what I did was...
The investment income has gone down. Is that because we, in any part, are investing less, or is it just the market? Right?
As our fund balance goes down, we have less to invest, but it is mostly the market. I mean,
we have very limited investment options as a city, and we have, and we can only invest in certain fixed rate of return, and interest rates have dropped dramatically since 2006. So this is a direct result of our limitation of what we can invest in, and what has happened in those markets. It's nothing that we've done.
Yeah, we might have been earning.
You can thank Ben Bernanke for this more than anybody else.
Thank you.
So then on the next page, I did a roll forward, and I chose the time period of 2011 through 2015, so that gives us a year of actuals, and then I chose 2015 because if we do like a three-year labor contract, that would take us through 2015. In the general fund, um, 2011 are the actual numbers. 2012 is I would say it's the budget we passed, but really the expenditures, I think the budget we passed was about 12 million, but we're at 12 million this year. So I plugged in really what I thought we would be spending. And then I just built in a small inflation factor. There's no salary increases or anything built into this. I just built in an inflation factor because, you know, healthcare costs are going to be going up, fuel prices, that sort of thing. And then I balanced it with the transfers in to keep our fund balance at around $3 million. That is where we've been wanting to keep it for the last few years.
And those transfers will come primarily from our capital improvement.
Yep. Yeah, internally on the schedule, the transfers out of the capital improvement fund equals the transfers into the debt service and the general fund. And the debt service fund, the expenditure by that is the actual amount of our debt service for those years. So that, those are all solid numbers. The revenue, is based on pretty much just that the only revenue source is that millage we just put on, and I just projected a little small increase on that. And then, of course, the transfers from the capital improvements fund again. And there's no need to maintain any sort of a balance in that fund. We just transfer in there what we need to retire the debt. Capital Improvements Fund, 2011 are the actuals. Those numbers look large because it has the bond proceeds going in and the retirement of the notes. 2012 numbers are from the budget we just passed. 2013, the revenue I reduced because the 2012 number has the grant money for the river trail in there. And then I just put a small increase in there because we do collect income tax on the capital improvements fund. We do have investment income in the capital improvements fund. The main revenue source there, of course, is the transfers from the tax department of the income tax revenue. And then the transfer out is really just the number that we need to cover the debt service and to maintain our general fund balance. The expenditures on the capital improvements fund, when I sat down to do this schedule, I knew Kevin was working on his five-year capital plan, and I was just going to take his numbers and plug them in there. But if you look at his capital plan, he was very aggressive on the plan, and also even though it's only a five-year period, I know he wanted to put everything on there that we've been talking about. But if I would have just took his numbers and plugged them in there, I mean, we would have been down to zero after a couple of years. So I kind of took a look at it and thought, well, you know, which projects are we really going to be doing given our financial situation? And so I came up with those numbers for 13, 14, and 15. You know, I thought to myself, another way I could do this schedule is just put zeros in there, but that's not realistic either. But that's the sort of thing we'll look at the beginning of each year. And that probably is the number on the schedule that we can impact the most.
The capital improvement expenditure
yeah.
number. I know, these numbers that we're projecting out are significantly lower than what they've been in each of the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have, and I don't want to didn't figure this out till last night, but what kind of capital expenditures have we been making? I know if this year you got the, or in 2011, we had the 11.6. But I'm thinking we've been spending about, am I right, 10 million plus a year?
Well.
Because what my point is, this is a dramatic cutback in our capital expenditures reflected here over what our history has been. Am I right about that?
Yes. Now, a lot of those expenditures in the past have been financed. So, you know, you get proceeds coming in and expenditures going out. I didn't account for any kind of new financing or projects, yeah, and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, we've spent a lot of money on roads. Yeah. I mean, we've done a lot of capital improvement work. And in one respect, our infrastructure is in relatively good shape compared to our surrounding communities, because we have spent a significant amount in capital improvements over the 8 years that I've been here. We've spent a lot of money on stuff, and this is a dramatically different level of expenditures on capital projects than I've experienced during my time on council. And that, well, yeah, that's my perception. I want to make sure.
Yeah, I mean, I made the assumption that we're not going to do that,
yeah,
given our financial situation. And
well, our point is those have impacts on our, I mean, the other point, I mean, ultimately, those, that kind of a decision has an impact on the community, just like other spending decisions that we're making. So, you know, when we're projecting these kinds of capital expenditures, we're saying we're not going to be as aggressive in maintaining our community infrastructure as we have. And that's an important trade-off. And I guess what I'm thinking about is juxtaposing, you know, these significant cutbacks in capital improvements versus other cutbacks, and you know, including personnel and wages. So this is dramatic. My point is, this is a dramatic change in our allocation, and it's an allocation that's impacting capital improvements and work on our infrastructure dramatically more than our other expenses.
And if you look at our 2012 budget, we began that this year. I mean, there's not much in there this year either.
Well, you know, Doug, put it a different way, it's a dramatic change in our philosophy of governing, right?
Right.
I mean, we're making potentially making a conscious decision around the table that we're going to ease back on at least major capital projects. And, you know, clearly that will call for some sort of a planful approach to doing capital projects in some proactive way, but not as quickly. But I mean, we're making a conscious choice if we move down this road.
But dovetailing with that, a lot of what we've done over the last several years has been keeping ahead of the curve with the infrastructure. And now that we're slowing that down, we have to be prepared that there could be, quote, emergency type things that could come up that are going to affect this budget from an infrastructure standpoint that we didn't plan on.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think, though, that we shouldn't be addressing this in an across-the-board way. You know, we're just automatically going to ratchet back every project by a certain percent. Because as we look forward, I think there are certain projects that become strategically important for our future. You know, the economic development projects, the SOMO kind of projects, and some others, while important, aren't quite as urgent as that. And so we have to modulate our thinking in terms of which projects are go-ahead kind of projects and which ones we want to slow down.
And I don't mean, I'm not critical of what we've done. I think what the monies that we've spent on our capital improvements things have been, money is very well spent. You know, I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, before I was a city councilman, I didn't notice things like road quality and, you know, a lot of things that I see all the time now. You know, and we have a, you know, one of the nice things about living here is that we do have, you know, we have good streets and we have, you know, we have a first-rate water system. We've got good parks and we've got, you know, we level sidewalks, you know, things like that. Those have all been, I'm not being critical of any of those. But what I'm pointing out is that, in a way, we're going to have to, you know, we're talking about, in this projection, cutting back those types of activities significantly, you know. And you know, are we going to have, you know, 30, it seems like every, you know, we spend $30,000 to $70,000 a year fixing plumber pool, you know. But we've done it, and it's been, and it's, you know, and plumber pool is a great asset. You know, and those are the kinds of things that we're going to have to, that are going to be impacted as we go forward. And as we, and we make a conscious decision to spend more on people, personnel, rather than those projects. And there's some of that already reflected in this budget. And in this projection, and we ought to do that consciously, not just because that's the way, frankly, that's the easier way to do it.
But from a street standpoint, I guess I'll say also that if we tend to back off a street maintenance schedule, the paper's going to have to be paid. And it may not be this council, but we have to look at that too. If we don't keep up with these streets, I agree with the mayor's philosophy that and what Doug has said too. You compare our streets with Toledo and anyplace else. There's no comparison. But if we back off this schedule, and Kevin can counsel us on that, future councils are going to have to take care of it.
I guess what I really wanted to show here is the definite downward trend. You know, I look at this as a starting point because there are several decisions we make to influence this. You know, we had talked about target balances, and I guess the point I want to make is it really doesn't matter what we set our target balance at, so we can get this decline under control. We're just going to go right past it anyway. I mean, I do like having that $3 million general fund balance, but I would say once we can get the reduction of our fund balance under control, maybe we set our capital target balance based on which capital projects are going to do rather than a percentage basis.
Well, if you added two more years to this, we wouldn't be able to make that transfer.
You're right. Scott, I thank you for your great work here, and I don't think this surprises any of us. I mean, I think we've known this was coming. It's very helpful to see it on paper, so I really appreciate that. I thought I heard you say that you had a couple of thoughts about how we might change the direction on this. I maybe misunderstood that. But I do think that this is something that, you know, won't be easy to reverse, but I'm sure administration is looking at that and likely preparing some kind of recommendations for us to consider. Is that accurate?
I wasn't set to make any today. But,
no, I wouldn't.
But this is the kind of thing, like I said, this would be our starting point, and then each year as we prepare budgets, we can influence these numbers. So, you know,
to make I still know the answer to that question. Yes, and we've been looking at it for several years. We look at it every week at our staff meetings. There's no single large fix to this. There's both revenue problems and expenditure issues. Revenue, there's not a whole lot we can do short of a rash action, which has not yet merited to raise taxes. I don't think that's going to happen. I was surprised when I saw these numbers to see that we project in next year that we're going to have a lot less income, more than $1 million worth of less income than we had in 2006. That's just unbelievable to me. And it's not just the state of Ohio taking $1.5 million of income away from us that we had back in 2009 or 2008. It's also this loss of $1.5 million of investment income. Together, those are what are really getting us. Real estate tax is not that big of an issue on us, but Scott somehow decided that we were only $107 different between 2006 and 2013 projections. So we have a revenue issue. And I'm certainly not a person that says we need to just immediately raise taxes. We do have that possibility, and we look at that over the next several years. Don't do it now. It's too early. But you can raise the income tax rate, or you can decrease the credit that you give for people for paying taxes someplace else. That's the end result, and it probably happens in a year out past of what's on these sheets. The other is to control expenditures. Yes, we've done a lot of streets and utilities, but a lot of those have been bonded. Some of it's cash, some of it's bonded debt. And we have to reduce the amount of that. But we have some projects, as Mark said, that we may not want to cut. We may want to be bonding $1 million or more dollars to go into the SoMa district or along Monroe Street. We have the ability to do that. We are not to our debt limit. We can do that, but when you sell debt, obviously you have to pay it back, and it's going to affect the debt service payments on here. But we are not strung out as far as we can go. As we've talked in other budget discussions, personnel is a major cost, and I have each department head now preparing to report to me how they can lose one or two or three or four people, preferably by attrition, over the next couple of years. We will bring those options to you, and you're going to have to make the political decision. Are we going to cut services to lose these people, or is this worth keeping? I think Sylvania runs much leaner than most other communities. We do not have the excess fat that other communities do, or like was reported that Maumee has $1 million they can easily trim out of their budget because they had excess people going on. And it's easy to see if you go to the next page that Scott didn't get to yet, comparison to other communities. Our municipal income tax is so much lower than these other communities around here or similar size, and that's because we don't have as many jobs inside our corporation limits. We have 2/3 or so of our residents go and work in another community and pay no tax here. Mayor Cini tried to address that in a small way a long time ago by instigating the refuse collection fee. At least you had to pay to have your trash picked up. But we may need to go beyond that, and maybe we don't. But big problems like this are solved with many incremental steps, both that will impact services and some that won't. But we're not going to fix it with one fell swoop unless you do what some governments do, or just say, raise taxes. I'm not prepared to do that. We've got to change the way I do business. Doug's started this years ago. Government's too big. And the state of Ohio, between the state of Ohio and the interest rates, they are going to make our government smaller. There's just no doubt about it. It's not business as usual. It hasn't been for a few years, but we really have to address it. And each day, each decision we'll make, when we lose employees, and we're going to lose several within the next year over the PERS change, once the Ohio legislature makes that change, we're going to lose 15 people probably. George, is that too big of a number?
Yeah, probably closer to six.
Six? Well, there'll be more coming along after that, and we're going to have to decide. Do we replace those people? Do we try to combine jobs? And what happens when we do that? We'll be looking at each and every one of those.
Can you remind us, Mayor, what that change would be?
To the PERS system? They are changing from 30 to possibly 35 years the amount of money, the amount of years to be fully invested in the system, and they are also changing the way that you get inflation increases. Right now, that system will pay you out 3% every year, and it'll go to 2% maximum once they make the change. And you're going to have to work longer before you're fully invested and get your 60% out of that system. I don't know if they're going to change medical or not. PERS is in better shape than the STRS, the State Teachers Retirement Fund. But those changes are not yet done, and the police retirement fund is another one. Those are tougher to pay for, the police one. We have millage that pays for that because they don't have to work for 30 years. They work for 20 years or so and get very good payoffs on that. And there's a lot of retire, rehire that goes on in state program. It's called the DROP program. George, has that been voted out, or is that still in place? That's still there? You can work. You don't even tell your employer you're retiring, but you retire through them. You get your full salary, and you get your full retirement all at the same time. I mean, it's pretty nice deal. Things are going to change. And with us really doing it, we haven't done anything wrong here. We haven't done anything or missed anything that we should have done. But our income's down over $1.1 million since 2006 by not doing it. So we're all going to earn our high municipal salaries much more in the next few years.
Scott, one thing that would help me would to, I know it's probably in the budget someplace, would be to have a list of the properties the city owns that are non, how would I say, municipal. You know, I don't want to include this building or the administration building, but those properties that we own that are non-related to government, I guess. Mm-hmm. I would like to have a complete list of those and just a very conservative value of those properties.
Probably pay real estate taxes on those.
Jim? To the extent that they are not used for governmental purposes, that's correct.
So we would have a Lucas County auditor's value on those.
Correct. An example of that would be the estate jeweler's pizza place.
Right.
That is, we pay property tax on that. We've not filed for exemption. But the revenue from that far exceeds the expenditures to keep it going. So, but those would be examples of non-governmental.
We've made some conscious investments in some parcels in our downtown.
We have these kind of two duplex units up here on North Main. But the city also has a number of scattered lots in neighborhoods that we don't pay property taxes on. Those are parklands, non-income producing.
Yeah, those were most of those lots for a long time when we did plots, we required those, right?
That was part of the land development subdivision rules.
Yep. Yeah.
But, you know, I recall, Mike, that at some point, I believe, some of us were on council, we've had a discussion about those parcels, right? I mean, I think including the community pool over near Sylvan, including a little parcel on Mainbridge, whatever that street is. So we have probably, Mike, you're right, more parcels like that than we know about. The problem when we looked at it at the time was, what do you do with them? You know, because in many cases they're not buildable, or it presents issues to make them zoned or prepared to be buildable. So I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't go back and revisit the question, but I think previous council has looked at that. And I think in tough times, Mayor, it's always good to go back and look at every option.
Absolutely. And those little units, we've got one in the neighborhood at the southwest corner of Brent and McFord. We've had to defend that. We had neighbors moving their fences onto it and kind of taking it over. And we have to pay to somebody to go mow those too, right? They are an issue for us if we can have the review of them and decide, well, maybe we sell some of these and we both get income from selling it and we lose the cost of maintaining. And we do have some of those. Neighbors probably wouldn't be happy when we do that.
Well, you know, I think there's, in Toledo, actually, there's a program put in place where neighbors could opt to buy the property, right? And, mm-hmm. and in exchange for maintaining it, get maybe less than market rate.
Yep. So we'll get those, we do get tax bill, or just the tax bill on every one of those.
Scott, are we to page three now?
Yeah, the mayor talked about page three a little bit, and that's, this is, was put together by City of Maumee, and they shared the results with me, and it just shows, you know, where we're at in comparison to, I mean, I mostly look at Perrysburg, Maumee, and Argonne, I don't think about Marysville or Vandalia. But you can see we do collect a lot less income tax than Argonne, Maumee, and Perrysburg. And our general fund balance, in comparison to, you know, our tax revenues is pretty high. And also our capital fund balance is very healthy compared to those other entities too. So this is really just for your information. It compares our millage, income tax rate, whether we give a credit or not. And also, which is interesting, is the assessments too. A lot of the cities will assess various items that we just provide of our general revenues. I know that Toledo is not here, but I know they assess for like snow removal or leaf pickup and all that sort of thing. So this is kind of just for your information items.
Just, well, you've got the tax rate on there. Just in the Toledo area, though, Perrysburg does not give full credit. He's got the line called reciprocity. It's not really not reciprocity, it's credit. The other ones show on here as full, but Argonne that has full has a 2.25% income tax. Toledo has full credit at 1.5%, but they also have that 0.75% that they revote every few years. Some of the smaller communities, Ottawa Hills, I think only has 50% credit. Holland only has 50%. They're not on here, they're smaller communities. Mm-hmm. Ours is the lowest rate and the largest credit at the moment.
Do we have time for somebody to talk about the impact of changing the credit policy, the reciprocity policy? I mean, is it symbolic to change it, and it kind of puts us in a category of not being a good regional player, or are there some other aspects to it that keep us from considering it?
I'm not sure about those answers, but I've instructed Scott to work with the tax commissioner and find out what kind of impact it would have financially, how many dollars it would be. Yeah. It's $1.5 million or $2 million a year, something like that, but I don't have a real number for you.
That's all we can.
Yeah, it depends on the 50% credit. That's probably all it would be. But remember, then you got, let's just say, 2/3 of the people who live in Sylvania pay their income tax someplace else.
Right.
Well, they all have to file an income tax report now, and they get to the bottom line at zero because they have a full credit for someplace else. You're going to have 2/3 of the people in Sylvania all of a sudden owing us $400 or $500 at the end of the year. That's an big impact to 2/3 of our...
But that's instead of paying it someplace else, correct?
No, they pay both places then.
Oh, they pay both places.
Yeah.
So if in your instance, if you get 50% credit, you're
yeah, I get
50%
it. You'd be one of the people who get hurt. You're one of those people.
Pay it again to the city of Sylvania.
Got it. So it's not really that we're stepping out of the reciprocity piece. I mean, Toledo would not suffer. Our citizens, our taxpayers would suffer.
No, the other way to do it, you raise the income tax rate, then you are taking income from someplace like Toledo. And Doug's brought this up before. If you raise our income tax up, say, to 2%, that means that there are people that come into Sylvania and work from someplace else, like Toledo residents, they leave 2% here. Instead of taking 0.75% back to Toledo, they have to take 0.25% back to Toledo.
That's the numbers don't work in our favor, though, right? We're always going to have more outflow than inflow?
I don't have those numbers anymore, but it used to be that the lack of reciprocity. Reciprocity used to be where you pay an income tax where you work, and 50% of it would come back to the community.
Right.
The loss of that used to cost us about $2 or $2.5 million a year. When Toledo instigated, took away tax reciprocity unilaterally back in the 1970s, it started costing us over $1 million right away.
Well, most of our income tax, I forget what the number is, but most of our income tax revenue comes from people who don't live in the city.
Work here, but don't live here.
Work here, but don't live here.
And that would be the big employers, right? Flour and
schools.
Right.
And the state legislature has a bill, and I don't think there's any serious about it now, but they got it on their docket that from the township representatives in the Ohio legislature, if you don't live in a community, you don't have to pay any income tax there. So if somebody from Sylvania Township works at Flower Hospital, they're proposing they don't pay the income tax. That's been proposed before, but it's back in our legislature here.
If I could just comment, you know, being involved somewhat in the economic development or issues over the years, you know, look at it from another perspective. That's not revenue, but what brings people to our community? Each of these things has a different impact. For example, if you raise our income tax from 1.5 to a higher rate, what impact would that have on an employer or on someone's willingness to want to locate our place to somewhere else? Right now, we have the bragging rights of the lowest income tax rate that's available. Who might be affected by that? Similarly, if you eliminate reciprocity, what effect does that have on our housing? Not reciprocity, the credit. Would that encourage people to move out of the city or to move into the city? And you got to look at it from how those long-term trends apply. If you eliminate a credit for someone who lives in the township or works in the township or lives in the city, what impact does that have? Would that encourage them to move their business or move their production of income into the city or out of the city? So there's some overriding things that you've got to look at when you make a decision or look at that. It's not just the numbers. Long-term trends. I think when someone looks at Perrysburg, you know, that's a pretty expensive place to live. You know, you have to pay a 50% upcharge to live there. Same with Ottawa Hills. I think over time it encourages people to live elsewhere. And we have to look at that as well too. So it's not just that, it's how does that affect someone's desire to live here or put a business here?
Jim, there's a broader picture even then, and that is, isn't Perrysburg affected in some way by lower tax rates in Wood County?
Oh, clearly.
So those citizens are netting out to the good, it's not purely driven by their Perrysburg city taxes.
The state is just, it's TARDA, it's the zoo, it's the mental, it's all those various extra countywide levies that have driven things up.
Right.
In Lucas County, you pay about 2% of the value of your property every year in property taxes. You get out of Lucas County, go to Wood County or Ottawa County, it's down closer to 1 or 1 1/3. Lucas County is a very high property tax.
I'm agreeing that there needs to be an analysis, but clearly that analysis has to be looking at the
big thing. Yeah, I limited mine to our immediate neighbors, which is, are you going to live in Springfield Township, Sylvania Township, Toledo, or Sylvania? When you go south of Lebanon, there's an outflow across the water down to Wood County.
Well, yeah, except that I think when I was in the school board, there was a clear perception that our competitors also included Monclova Township, Springfield Township.
Correct.
The Anthony Wayne School District was a big competitor for
right.
homes, for residences.
Well, you know, when I look at, you know, when you look at the, when you change the credit, you impact from primarily your real estate, your individuals who are making decisions about where to live. You work in the city of Toledo. I mean, all your income in the city of Toledo, doesn't matter whether you buy a house in the city of Sylvania or township is sitting. If you're paying the same income tax either way. On the other hand, if you change the reciprocity, that gets to be an issue, and it impacts higher income individuals more so than lower. And when you change your income tax rate, I see that impacting more businesses that are going to locate here, and particularly, if you would, professional type businesses, doctors, lawyers, accountants, who will pay a higher percentage of their income in income taxes than here than they would to locate in the in townships or unincorporated areas. And that's a stress. I mean, we have that already. And so when we start messing with those rates, we have direct impacts on both.
For example, for you, if you're given, you being, just for the sake of discussion, you're paying your income tax to the city of Toledo because that's where your offices are. You get full credit here. If we were to raise the credit to 50%, that would increase your total income tax. Would that have a bearing on a decision for you to relocate your business to Sylvania, which would eliminate that that credit? So it might also be a draw for those folks to come to the city to keep their income tax relatively low.
That's relevant for owners, but not workers.
I understand that.
My case, I get to pay income tax here on the income I earn in Tampa, Charlotte.
What a wonderful joy.
All those other places.
So well, we're glad to do that rather than paying it in Toledo.
Absolutely.
Mayor, do you know what the percentage of communities in Ohio, municipalities, that have full reciprocity versus
I don't like using the word reciprocity. I know it says that on here, but reciprocity was you send 50% of it back to where you live.
That was an old concept.
That's an old concept that is gone. And I can't let this go by without saying when Jack Ford was in the Ohio legislature, he introduced a bill to reinstate reciprocity just between Toledo and Maumee because Toledoans were paying more money to Maumee the other ways around. Toledo unilaterally ended reciprocity around here and then proposed to put it back in where it was to their benefit. We're talking about a credit for our residents that work someplace else, and I don't know that number. I know Scott can go on into some sort of database and try to find that out. That'd be a good one to do. Another one to look at is the tax rates. You know, we're looking at some from around here, but when we have that unification study between Sylvania and Sylvania Township, I remember very clearly that the bigger community, the higher the income tax, almost always. In Sylvania, if we were going to become one with Sylvania Township and get up around 45,000 people, every community, as I recall, in Sylvania, in Ohio that was that size had a 2 or 2.25% income tax. The smaller communities are the ones that have the lower income tax rates. But Scott could also print out some of those. I know he's shown some of them to me over the years, but we're at the lower end. There's just no doubt about it. And the big cities are higher and rising. Columbus just had a big increase.
Who's Columbus?
I think they're 2.5.
Are they?
4. Well, George, do you know that one? George isn't over there.
It's either 2.5 or 2.75.
Yeah, they just raised it 0.75%.
Well, and that reflects this philosophical change at the state level where we aren't funding local governments with statewide revenue like we have historically. We haven't been over ever since the income tax in the state of Ohio put it.
That was part of the promise for the income tax would end, that they would share that with the locals. And of course, they're also trying to collect all the local income taxes down in Columbus and make local income taxes to have more uniformity, which depending on how they look at income and could cost some communities millions. So for some reason, Perrysburg says they'll lose $1 million if they go to uniform property tax or income taxes. I don't understand why. We'll try to find that out. Dayton says they'll lose $10 million. It has to be what they include in income, what's taxable, things like that.
Well,
And it also has to do with carry forward losses.
Get some mechanic out.
But again, I think we need to plan, we need to have a vision for the future, but now is not the time to do either one of these things. We don't need to raise the income tax yet. We don't need to decrease the credit. We go back to Scott's second sheet. The end of this year, we still expect to have almost $16 million in reserves, but it's going down at about $3 million a year. And that trend cannot continue. I told you before that my choke point was $10 million. When we get down to $10 million of reserves, well, if you look at just the capital improvements funds, that's the end of next year. If you look at all our funds, that's the end of 2014. So we have to do something, but we need to look at it both on expenditures and the income side. And things might change in Columbus. You know, things might help out. What if our income tax explodes and goes up $1 million? Well, that doesn't solve our problem either, but it certainly pushes it out several years. What's our biggest place for income taxes in the city? Flower Hospital campus. Any increases above inflation there, we share 40% with Toledo as a part of our water. For the first time that kicked in last year, Scott, the amount of $30,000. You know, we are millions of dollars ahead of that contract, but it's going to kick in, and it has in a small way.
Under our charter, we have the water room increase.
There's inside millage. I guess I need some explanation of that. What do we have to vote to increase millage? What do we council vote versus the public have to vote?
I wish I had my parent test, but we have 15 mills that we can assess by charter without a vote of the people.
That's a lot.
Currently, I think we're at 5.1 or something like that. We have a lot of flexibility on putting property tax on the ballot, on the tax bill without a vote.
That could be a problem.
And just the other part of it, the city council can decrease the credit for taxes paid somewhere else just by a vote of council. But if you want to raise the income tax rate, that's a vote of the public.
We're at the top of our authorized tax rate under this council. So council's authority in the revenue areas can raise real estate taxes. We can change the credit. We can reduce the credit. In order to increase the income tax rate, we would need a vote.
Tough sell.
Just for the record, I would want to vote on any of those.
Political careers will be ended over that.
Fortunately, it's not an economic imperative for any of us.
That's correct. And it's not an imperative for the city to make those choices. We are not in crisis mode. Scott has given us this projection into the future. We have several years to respond to this. We are not, going hand to mouth for years. We can continue on draining $3 million a year for the next several years. We're not in crisis mode, no doubt about it.
Here's what would be, Scott, you have done this responsibly, and I understand that, okay, right? Because we've approved a budget for 2012 that's bigger than this. And if we look at our capital expenditures you're projecting, you're projecting significant restraint in our capital expenditures going forward. I mean, if you went through the same exercise and showed what we'd have actually budgeted and showed typical expenditures, capital expenditures, took the average over the last 5 years and plugged that number in each of these years, okay, that would show a dramatically different picture. That would show, and I'm not suggesting
it's distorted a little bit because of the bonded indebtedness. You spend it what we borrowed it.
Right. But, we might, we could conceivably do that going forward.
We can.
We're probably not, even though we're not going to do that. But my point is that this shows a lot of spending restraint already, not, and a dramatic change in what we're doing. So if, this shows a much more responsible council and administration dealing with our current situation than maybe we have seen in some other communities that have faced similar situations. And the reason I say that is because this is, I don't want somebody to pick this up and say, well, see, you guys are great for the next 3 years. Okay, we're already, doing this is a dramatic change in the way we have governed. This show, this, your projection shows us being, responding to the current situation in a way that that reflects some significant cuts and reflects, particularly in this capital expenditure area, significant change. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think, as we sit here today, we're assuming it's going to happen, but I'm cautious about what, you know, what Todd talked about in terms of our streets expenditures in particular. I really wonder whether we can, over a 5-year period, constrain those street expenditures that significantly without having a significant impact on the community. And we need to talk about that and think about that, because those numbers, those capital expenditures in 2013, 14, and 15 could be just to maintain a status quo more than.
I was very aware of council's feelings when we prepared this year's budget, as I did the projection. I mean, I just figured that was going to continue, and why plug in the big numbers when it's really not going
to happen. Doug, to your point, I think we need to rely on Mr. Aller's expertise. As to what?
It's in here. You haven't gotten to it yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Aller's projections and Mr. Smith's do not correspond.
No. And maybe we ought to talk about item 4, because Kevin's got, I didn't have time to total these up, but looks like these numbers are bigger.
Oh, I totaled them up. It's 4.8 million in 2013, 6.2 million in 2014, and 5.4 million in 2015. But okay. There's no way. But like I said, this is
the wish list you put in.
Yeah, it was basic. There are projects that I know you haven't had a whole lot of time, but if you run through that, there are projects such as the Monroe Street corridor. That project is still in there. There are some utility projects that we're doing diligence now in running our camera system through and taking a look at how our network is set up on the water side and things like that. I took what was had been put together for the Ohio Public Works Commission, did a little bit of fine-tuning as far as moving things within that 5-year period, but I didn't take out the Monroe Street corridor, just as an example. I didn't take that off. Knowing that was in council's, the back of their mind about the project. Before next year's plan is put together, those will be, that'll probably come back with more of a, here's what I really think we have got to get done in order to keep the city infrastructure in good condition. And some of those other projects maybe come, somebody threw it out a little bit ago, maybe become a wish list thing. And if we're going to do that, it's going to add $1.5 million or $2.5 million to either our capital program or bond. And but for this one, I kept everything on there. And we'll start pulling things off and moving things around. I probably won't pull them off, but what I will probably do is move them out.
Exactly. Sure.
Move them out to the 5-year.
And I'm just looking at these numbers. If we were to use these numbers rather than the numbers that Scott's got, It's a much different picture, okay? And we're going to have to make conscious decisions to move away from Kevin's projections to get to this. So my point is, this already reflects a lot of good government big cuts from things that we have. The Scott's projections reflect big cuts from what our service director suggests we might very well need in a normal setting. So, in other words, I don't think we don't want to lock this in stone and say, oh, this is where we are. Because really, we're here only through exercise of great restraint. And actually the picture, as we currently, if we were just to leave everything like it is, we were just to continue business as usual, the picture would be much more dark. And I know we're not planning to do that, but that's the reality. And there are others in our community that need to understand that. Okay, that Scott's projection today shows a very responsible and aggressive response to a difficult financial situation that we face as a community, and a very responsible. I'm sorry,
Doug. I think you make some great comments. Excuse me, Todd. Did I interrupt you? But I also think that there is room for lots of discussion in the pending items here. So I do feel like, again, very aggressive, good work, Scott, but I think there's lots of room for discussion based on the things that Mr. Aller presented today. So.
Well, and I agree with that. I guess Mike, and I haven't had a lot of time to study this yet, but to me, we got apples and oranges here, because there's going to be things that are going to happen in infrastructure-wise in this community. They're going to have to be done. And some of these things don't have to be done. And I think that's where we're going to earn our money is trying to figure out what has to be done and what doesn't.
Sorry about that, Tom. And that's part of what we're taking a look at. I'm getting, you know, more information, you know, each day from the water department, sewer department, streets. You know, during this past winter that we didn't have, we were, you know, lucky enough to have a couple of our street department employees out doing pavement condition ratings. It's a PCR ranking that communities do. You know, we were able to have our own employees do that. A study of that nature would cost probably $50,000 to $60,000 to have a consultant. But we use our existing employees that were trained on the program. So now we have every street in the city, should be done by now, they were finishing up last week, but every street in the city has been inspected, so to speak, and its problems spelled out. Are they surface problems? Are they sub-base problems? Things like that. So that's now, that will be the list, so to speak, that we start working off of and say, okay, you know, we can fix this for $15,000, but this over here is going to take $100,000, and, you know, start planning that out. So,
yeah, I think that's going to be critical.
Absolutely. Yeah, you made a statement earlier, if we don't do anything, you're going to pay the piper, and that's what's correct. We can't, I don't think we can get ourselves in the mode where we don't do anything for 4 years and then try to catch up. Mm-hmm. I think we have to do a little each year and just spend it wisely where we get the biggest bang for our buck.
We've spent a lot of money on street replacements. Our old concrete streets just couldn't be repaired. We've repaired some of them where we could, but we've gotten a lot of those. We've also had our annual street repaving program. Since 1997, we've put about $250,000 into that. We've cut back on that this year. That's got a lot of our asphalt streets in pretty good shape where we go in the middle and fill. And we've rolled it back here for a year or two. We're going to start that back up again. But our streets are not in bad shape. We've got them in pretty good shape. You don't stop doing it. You don't do what Mayor Sini told me. And I just can't remember. He said it in this room. He said, somebody brought up speed bumps, and he pretty much said in a public meeting, we don't need speed bumps because we got potholes doing the same thing. Well, we don't have potholes.
No, we don't.
Speed bumps became an issue. But we're not, our roads are not in bad shape, but roads deteriorate. We're gonna have to keep up our annual mill and fill programs. We have more streets that aren't asphalt now rather than concrete. It's easier to go in there and do a mill and fill. We can roll back on that for a couple of years. We're gonna start it back up again. We don't have as many of the total replacement projects. What we put into the Highland View area, $4.8 million or something in the last 2 years, that's a lot of money, but we don't have to do it again. We don't have to do it again in many of our neighborhoods. Lincoln Woods is the one that hasn't been done, and we're trying to replace sections of concrete as we go along. The problem with some of those old roads is we don't have under drains on anything. They wobble due to frosting.
But we've done, I mean, the projects that we've spent money on have been ones that will have a really long-term life. I mean, you know, replacing those concrete streets was expensive. And the $4.8 million project we just did is a multi-generational fix. We've got that funded, and that's behind us, and that's all good.
And we did not assess for it. We've done all these projects not assessing for it. That may not be possible in the future, but we don't have any left. So,
yeah.
I remember earlier years on council, we'd have to have assessments done. When Allen Street and that area was done, we had assessments. When Grove Bell, I think, was done the first time, we had assessments. That's not very pleasant to go through, and it's hard to do when you have $20 million in the bank. That's why we chose to do it without assessing our residents. That doesn't happen in most communities. Property owners paid for those street improvements. We've done all these improvements without assessments.
But we've also done all the maintenance without assessments too, and that works. So I think we've been very judicious and fair in our way we approach this.
Yep.
And treated and been fair to our neighbors and, you know, to each other. I think that's admirable. I think that's something that it was in place before I got here, and I think it's worked pretty well.
Scott, is there anything else that
one more quick topic?
Okay.
In the email I sent yesterday, I talked about the bond market is just amazing. Just when you think you need to lock into your rates before they go up, they go down again. We have an opportunity to refund our 2004 bonds. They're callable next year. And we have an opportunity to refund those and save about $500,000 over the remaining life of the bonds, which is about a 10% savings when you figure the present value of those payments. And basically where you're getting down to is you're replacing coupons of 3.8 to 4.5% with coupons of 0.4 to 2.35%. So I just wanted to run that by the committee. Because
that's
there'll be an ordinance.
That's the flip side of the income equation that we've got.
Yeah. So I just wanted to be aware we're working on that. There'll probably be an ordinance second meeting in April.
So, Scott, what will be the total savings back to the community?
I'd say about $500,000 over the life of the bonds.
That's great.
Replaces a little of that income.
Yeah. Are there any other questions this morning? I want to thank Mr. Scott. Sincerely, thanks Scott for all his work on this, as well as Mr. Aller for all his work. I think, as we all can see, our work is just beginning. Regarding scheduling the next committee of the whole meeting, it'll be we will do that Monday night at the council meeting. Before we end this session, are there any more questions for any of the administrators? Seeing none, I thank you all for your attendance and your participation, and we stand adjourned at 8:40 a.m. Thank you very much.